You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 556 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined by Mr. Fosma Moon.
Good evening, from Taipei.
From Taipei. That's where we're at.
For the moment.
It's episode 556 in the episode hotel.
Yes, which is a very strange hotel.
It is a very odd place.
I need to stop letting you pick hotels. I in Asia.
I looked for, I mean, this is, yeah, Singapore. That hotel closed.
Did it?
Yeah.
Oh, gee, what a surprise.
Yeah, during COVID, I think it was like, we stayed in this hotel. It was like a boutique hotel just outside of Little India.
It was in Little India. It wasn't even outside it.
And it was like bright yellow inside. And
the Wanderlust Hotel.
The Wanderlust. Foz and I just realized where the mic is on his mic.
Yeah. Details.
We stayed at the Wanderlust Hotel, and it was like bright yellow rooms where I think the toilet had like glass that like opened up to the room.
Oh, the bed was on a platform.
Yeah, your room was even wilder than mine.
Yeah.
But this hotel, the episode, is just odd because there's a toilet at the front of the room, but there's a shower bathtub in all in one that's sunk into the floor, and it sits between your room and the balcony.
It's more like a pit.
Yeah, it's like a pit. I'll have to try and take a picture for the show notes, because
I'm sure there's a picture on their website.
I don't know that there is. Don't know that there is.
It's interesting, though, because it's not like there's much privacy outside the window, so not sure what they were thinking.
So you take a shower, you have to close two curtains. You have to close the outside and the inside if you're with another person and you want any kind of privacy. We're in Taipei, headed to Jakarta is our final destination.
Well, the U.S. is our final destination.
Yeah, but we're going to Jakarta. All right, for all intents and purposes. And so we both took the San Francisco-Taipei flight just on different days.
Yes, and United.
And I took the flight 2 days ago, and you took it today.
Yesterday, whatever.
Yeah.
It all burst together.
How was your flight?
Meh.
How does it feel to be GS? I mean, we're now, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks into this?
Today's a week.
Has it only been a week?
Yes.
Oh, man, I'm losing track of time.
Today has been a week.
How was your first week of GS?
Interesting. Let's see. I did Newark to Denver, Denver to San Jose to get to the West Coast, and then San Francisco, Taipei to get here. Newark to Denver, I was in a middle seat, an E+. The Royal GS treatment.
Bulkhead, at least?
Yes, it was at least bulkhead.
Okay.
Denver, San Jose, I was in a bulkhead window to get in coach.
So domestic upgrades, not happening.
Not even sponsored.
Because you put GP or points down?
Because it was part of the Taipei ticket.
And it just couldn't?
Nope. Nope. San Francisco, Taipei, I was able to get upgraded on that. But the seat selection was paltry. There was nothing open on the window side. So I was stuck in the middle.
Meh.
Global reception at Newark was nice. Global reception in San Francisco was nice to circumvent some of the lines. The strangest part of it all was getting to in Denver, an hour and a half between flights, get to my gate, I board. As I'm walking down the jetway, a GS agent's walking up, and then she's like, Mr. Mahmood, I guess. She goes, well, yeah, we just want to say congratulations. We have something for you. Did you meet my colleague yet? I'm like, no. She's like, well, she's on her way over. I'm like, okay. So she walks me down to the bottom of the jet branch and says, you should probably go put your bag in there and, you know, I'll be right here. I'm like, okay. So I go put my bag in because I was in bulkhead and start walking out, and the purser wouldn't let me off the plane. He goes, you can't leave. I'm like, I'm going right there to meet her. He then went and goes and has some words with her. And then she comes onto the plane and says, you can just stay there. I think, okay. I got another pen and a card and another photo op.
You're never going to have to buy another pen in your life.
I know. Well, I was thinking I've now done 4 of the 7 domestic hubs.
It would be nice if they were all unique pens.
I know, but they're not. Only the PDX was unique.
And that's not even a hub.
I know.
That's because it used to be. It's like homage.
Like, that was a long... Did they even have a million-mile program when it was a hub?
No.
Yeah.
No. It was mostly 1900s flying out of there. So to call it a hub would be a stretch. That's cool. So you got another pen?
Another pen.
What did you think of your flight here to Taipei flight?
Meh.
That's generally how I felt.
Yeah. I mean, I had a good crew member. She was very attentive. She was very good. So I don't have any complaints there. But the food is meh. I mean, the stuff at the lounge in San Francisco is just a freaking zoo.
Really?
Yeah. I got there with maybe an hour and 20 minutes before boarding started. I went to the restaurant. Like, oh, yeah, it's an hour long wait.
For one person.
For one person. And this is after the Asia Bank has left, but before the European Bank has.
Because it's one of the last flights to leave to Asia. Yeah.
And I was just like, this is absurd.
Yeah, it's wild.
Like, it surprises me that United has invested so much money in Chicago and Newark to expand the dining areas, but not San Francisco.
Mm. Yeah, because, I mean, San Francisco is space constrained, and they could build it out if they wanted to. They have the space on the roof there to do it.
They should have made the downstairs the dining area.
Because no one uses the downstairs.
Yesterday was actually pretty full.
But it used to be like that was...
Yeah, most of the time you go there, it's empty. And that's where I generally go hide. But yesterday, like I went down there were some seats open, but there was like, it's the fullest I've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like their choices with some of that stuff hasn't been great. My flight was delayed out of Portland. I was on a 10 a.m. connecting to a 2:20. I was on a 10 a.m. flight out of Portland connecting to a 2:20 flight out of San Francisco. Delayed it, kept having rolling delays because of ATC. Finally left at... I think we left at like 11:30. We got in at like 12:30 and boarding started like 40 minutes later. So I basically had enough time to walk to the next gate because of the condition that San Francisco was in.
Where did you arrive into?
Where did I come into? E?
You got your steps in yesterday.
Yeah, I got my steps in. Came into E, the far end of E, the very last, whatever that is, E10 or whatever, the very end. And then connected to, we left out of the F terminal. So I didn't have to go to G.
Oh, okay. At least you didn't have to go to a G. That's not so bad.
But it was like, there was no way I was going to the lounge at that point. So I just kind of skipped it. So I'll go to the gate and hang out.
Yeah, by the time you get to the lounge, you walk in, you turn around, come right back out.
Exactly. So kind of frustrating. I feel like United just like times flights out of Portland to never get any lounge time. Like if you're connecting to Frankfurt, they'll make sure you're there right if boarding starts for the Frankfurt flight or something like that. But my flight was kind of meh too. The food wasn't great. The crew was fine, but just overall, it was very bumpy. I don't know if your flight was bumpy, but...
Not really.
They were constantly coming on, telling people to take their seat pretty much the entire time.
Yeah, we had like two small patches of mild bumps, but that was it.
We had one where they told everyone to take their seats, including the flight attendants, for like an hour. And it was enough that it kept me up. Like it woke me up and kept me up. But that was fine.
I mean, we didn't have a million miler on our plane. Someone who hit a million miles yesterday. Got a whole serenade thing with the pilot coming back, gave them the map. The route map and everything signed. I was like, oh, that's a nice gesture.
Didn't get that.
I got nothing.
Those 767 pilots, man, they're not fans of you.
I got the purser saying congratulations to me privately, and that was it.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if the purser like walks back up, tells the pilot, hey, you know, there's a former miler guy who just got on the plane. You might want to.
No, this, I got the purser was last week on my former miler.
Oh, yeah, yeah. True. I was going to talk about SFO a little bit because. Part of the reason I couldn't visit the club was because of the condition that the airport is in. So there's a walkway from G to F that's like just a hallway. And then there's a walkway from F to E that's like a hallway plus a security checkpoint.
It's like, no, the security checkpoint is the old security checkpoint that was there.
Small, but it's smaller now. There's not as many...
I think it's the same. The entrance is smaller, but the number of lanes is the same.
Okay.
Because they built all that
before.
Yeah, before. And then basically everything, that wall where that ended west of that is, I guess that's west, is what they have shut down.
Okay. So it's a bunch of hallways to get everywhere.
Oh, it's like an M.C. Escher painting.
So to get to G from E, you have to go down F.
You have to go into the middle section of F.
And cut over.
And then you walk behind the food court, and then you take another temporary walkway that goes. Takes you all the way back to the walkway between, the original walkway between F and G.
Oh, that's gone too. It's now, it's its own walkway.
No, that's fine. But the one that connected it.
Yeah. The one that connected it. Yes. Up to the escalators.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were talking about this at dinner tonight. Like, it feels like San Francisco's doing a lot of work. And inconveniencing a lot of people, making people's walks very long. Because that's not even where United's gates end, isn't E, it's D.
Yeah, they have gate, yeah.
Which is Terminal 2. And I can't imagine making a connection from there with less than, I don't know, an hour? And that's the minimum connect time at San Francisco. And I think you'd be hard pressed to do it if you weren't in decent shape or had any kind of injury.
Yeah, if you came into D and you had a departure from G10 or G12, that's a walk.
So, and for what? Like, what are we getting? We're not going to get more gates out of it.
That's what I don't understand. Like, you look at Portland, you look at what San Francisco's doing. Like, it's lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
There's really no functional improvement. And I'm starting to wonder if, like, airport authorities just need to spend money, so they're doing all these frivolous projects to spend money.
To right? justify their budgets.
Yeah, we saw LaGuardia, right? Like, it got nice, but at the end of the day, they never fixed the fundamental problem with LaGuardia, which is runway capacity.
But there's no way to fix that.
Sure there is.
What? Close it?
Yeah, well, that would be the best way to fix it. Bring a dredging equipment in.
Add length to the runway?
Yeah, or add another runway. Right, part of the problem with LaGuardia is it's two perpendicular runways. If you had two parallels, you could do better operations.
Like nice spread out parallel ops. It's not a bad point. You couldn't land on the departure one. That's fine. It's not a bad idea.
But that's the thing. Airport authorities are not spending where they need to spend. They're spending... If you look at how airports are transforming, all the money is being spent to keep people captive in the terminal.
Yeah.
So that you spend more money. Because then they make more money, because then you buy more crap and they get a cut from every sale.
Yep. So the goal is to keep you in the airport doing something.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just an interesting side note that I noticed at SFO. I asked some questions of people we know that live in the Bay Area, and they're like, yeah, that's the way it is. And it's a huge inconvenience. I mean, it's kind of like SeaTac. Like, we've talked about Seattle. They're not adding gates or taxiways or anything to improve the actual operations of the airport. They're adding more space so that it feels less crowded in the head house. But it's not adding space at the gates. It's still going to be
so when very we first walk in, it doesn't feel so crowded. But then
when you're through security, it feels really crowded.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And they're not even fixing some of the security issues that they have. Like, it's unclear to me how that's all going to work. So I don't know.
Security at SeaTac is confusing to me.
It's a disaster.
Yeah, I don't understand how they've designed it or how, with all the different checkpoints, how you're supposed to navigate that.
You kind of guess and hope that you pick the right one. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is like they could fix, like if you look at Pittsburgh, right? Pittsburgh is getting a brand new terminal and they rebuilt basically the whole thing. They rebuilt the gate areas and
the
head house. They did
not rebuild the gate area.
They didn't improve it at all?
Not really.
No? That's really disappointing.
So Pittsburgh, if you recall, is a giant X.
Yeah.
They took away half the X.
Okay.
And what used to be, it was a giant X with the people mover and the terminal was remote. They basically took the bottom half of the X off, put the terminal building there now.
Okay.
So that there's no people mover. You can drive up to the terminal, which is connected to the concourse.
Why don't you make you happy?
Yeah, I don't really go to Pittsburgh much.
Okay, so let's take Kansas City as an example. That is a whole new, that's a net new terminal.
But very well done.
Very well done. I think the biggest disservice they did was build the walkway. Have to have a walkway to get to the terminal, like the actual extra gates. I mean, I guess it's better than having a train that breaks down all the time, a la Denver.
Yeah, that walk isn't that bad.
It's not that far.
It's not designed for wide bodies or anything, right? So it's
reasonable. And it's nice. It's got nice gate areas with plenty of room, lots of windows. It feels open.
I think they've done well at Kansas City. My biggest gripe at Kansas City is the rental cars. It's like they did all that work and then they didn't put them at the terminal.
Well, of course not. We're going to have buses for that, man.
Yeah, it's such a useless racket.
I'm interested to see what they do with the FW and how that actually turns out.
The F Concourse?
Because the new F Concourse is going to be brand new. I'm sure it's going to be something similar to D or E. But, like, they're rebuilding parts of B and C, I think.
They've been rebuilding it for years.
And I'm interested to see how that all shakes out, because those are very hard terminals to fix.
Or, like, look at what they're doing in Houston.
Knock it down in stages and start over.
Sucker.
Seattle could have learned a thing or two. So, anyway, we're dwelling on it. Tell me about the 220s. They're being abandoned by some airlines.
Yeah, due to the ongoing issues with the Pratt & Whitney engines, more and more airlines, I think the count is up to five engines, or five airlines.
So you told me Iraqi Airways, Egypt Air, Air Austral.
Yeah, Egypt Air sunsetted their entire fleet. I don't know how many that was. Iraqi had five, and they've parked all of them. And the latest was Air Austral. And again, I don't know how many. But, I mean, the 220s aren't exactly new at this point.
Yeah, it's not good. Isn't Qantas taking some too? Didn't they just take delivery of one?
I think they did, but I'm not sure. I know they took 321 recently. I think
they have an, either they're going to take delivery or they're like ordered. So it's a, and it's all engine related. So it's like they just don't have enough fixed engines to go around.
I mean, it's Pratt & Whitney. They're not really known for great engines. I mean, there's the American version of Rolls-Royce.
Is there any replacement for those engines? Is there another engine option?
I don't think there is on those.
So you're stuck.
Yeah, because I think they went with the sole engine option.
So what's Delta doing?
Probably parking a bunch of planes and swapping parts.
And Air Canada?
Like they're with the 321s. I can only assume Air Canada is probably doing the same thing.
Or they're bringing back 319s from Rouge.
Well, there's that too.
I can't believe that's, I mean, I don't think they would want to do that, but.
Well, when you're not incurring the cost.
Yeah.
And Pratt & Whitney is.
You do what you have to do.
It's not such a big deal.
Fair. Very fair. It's just wild.
But it's just like, it goes back to, you know, we've had the ongoing conversation around engine technology. Are we pushing the boundaries of physics too far? And is this a case of that? Is this just poor design? Right. And like, I'm very skeptical of the A350 for the same reason, which is single engine option.
And like, there's no other option to put on the 350s.
Yeah. And so if you would have like, at some point, something will come up with the Trents given history. Every Trent iteration has had some sort of flaw.
It has a time period where it goes through an issue. It eventually gets resolved, but it's an issue.
And what happens to the entire A350 fleet when that happens?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge number of planes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard because the airlines have kind of backed themselves into this corner with, we want efficiencies from the manufacturer to make it as affordable as possible to get these new planes into service and as quick as possible. But now it's like, well, they didn't build the plane to have a different type of engine on it. And so you're stuck with what you've got. Whereas, I mean, I think about like even the 757s, or the 76s, or the 777s, even, or the 744s. You go back as far as that, where you had different, you had Rolls-Royce engines, you had GE engines, some had Pratt & Whitney's. It's like you had different options, and the planes were built to take those engines and perform around the same with some give and take on those. But it's kind of like the pre-merger United 752s, right? They had Pratt & Whitney engines, I think.
Yes.
The pre-merger Continentals all had Rolls-Royce engines, and the Rolls-Royce engines perform much more efficiently than the Pratt & Whitney's. And it was just a choice that the two airlines made, and they made it work.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not good.
It's not good, but I mean, it makes me wonder, right? Because there's a guy I watch on YouTube, Mentor Pilot, and he's talked about the 220s before. And the problem with the Airbus has with the 220s, no commonality from a manufacturing perspective with anything else they do.
Because it's Bombardier.
Because it's a Bombardier plane. So the question is, how long does it last? And then when these problems keep creeping up and more people are parking them, it just begs the question of how long will the 220 really survive?
And then they build a facility in Alabama?
Yes.
So the 220? Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's going to break off and go back to Bombardier.
Nope.
Like, they don't want it. Didn't Boeing take a stake in Embraer?
I believe so.
Was it a stake or they bought part of them?
They were trying to merge at one point. That didn't work out.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the good news is the E190s are still, the E2s are still being produced separately as a separate product.
And right.
That's a good thing. Yeah, it's wild times. I don't know. Who does Breeze? Do they use 220s?
I think so.
Yeah. I would be interested to know what they're doing. Because, like, that's a majority of their fleet. They have some 190s in their fleet as well, but it's mostly
220s.
220s, yeah. So, anyway. Yeah. What else we got? Let's talk about, I want to talk about amenity kits for a minute.
Okay.
Do you use the amenity kit on the plane? Like, on long-haul flights?
Occasionally.
What do you use it for?
Mostly just use the toothbrush.
This is where I was going with this. So Seth and I have had this conversation before about, he brings his own eye mask. He brings his own earplugs. What else do you need? And I get that. I usually don't carry those two things. I could, but do we need amenity kits?
I mean, if they still went back to putting combs and mints and pens in, those are all useful things.
They are.
Right. How often did you need a pen for a customs form?
A lot. And some of them, I got one in this amenity kit.
Oh,
United.
Nice.
Yeah. But it does seem random.
Yeah. We'll
get them. they don't do mints anymore. They do a pair of socks, which I don't understand. Aren't most people wearing socks? I mean, I guess some people don't wear socks on planes.
They want to change their socks.
That's the thing I want to change.
I've never understood socks, but clearly there's something behind it.
And I know like there's a cultural thing with slippers. And so United's made a change where it's, I think all flights now, all international flights stocks slippers. You have to ask for them, but they're there.
Asia flights generally have them already.
Yeah. But like coming back from London, they had them.
But you have to ask
for them. You had to ask for them. So I'm just like questioning, like, could it be something like Singapore where it's not really an amenity kit? It's we come by and you pick out the things you need. Need a comb? Need a...
I think part of the problem with the amenity kit is it's just an expected thing in business costs.
In the United States.
I would say in the Western world.
Yeah.
Like, what airline other than Singapore
doesn't provide an amenity kit?
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Because I can't think of anyone.
I can't either. But I think there was like a piece of this, though, that I think like if they came by, it actually personalizes the service. And maybe United doesn't want to do this because they feel like it would take up one, the bedding takes up too much space to begin with, like all the crap that they give you. But like, I think it'd be nice if they came by and introduced themselves and be like, hey, here's some amenities. Take what you like. Leave what you don't.
An additional touch point, as they say.
A touch point. And reduce waste. Like the number of kits I see just like not used or open and then not like they take the toothbrush out. That's the number one thing people want. I don't want to dig in my bag to get a toothbrush. So
that's basically my philosophy.
I just want to brush my teeth and throw away the toothbrush. So, but my thought is like, just kind of either get rid of them or like, let's figure out a way to do this better.
I think amenity kits is one of those things that you'll never make everyone happy.
Yeah. If you got rid of them, people would be mad you got rid of them. Then there'd be people that are really happy you're not wasting stuff. I mean, because like even in premium economy, they give an amenity kit, which is socks, toothbrush.
An eye mask.
Eye mask. Earplugs. And it comes in a smaller bag. That's the other, like the bag, the Therabody bag. It's great. It's huge. Like the bag that United gives in business, it's massive. But the little kit for premium economy is the perfect size. Like it's...
At least it's better than the away cases they were giving away for a while.
Oh, where it's like a little mini suitcase?
Yeah.
People love those, though. People who collect amenity kits loved it.
I have a bunch of them. I hate them.
Do you want to give them away?
Possibly. To find them. I might have already given them away.
So yeah, we're flying... So tomorrow we're flying EVA.
EVA?
EVA? I don't know.
EVA?
EVA. BR is the airline code.
Yes.
Evergreen.
And then we split up in Singapore.
I'm taking Scoot, baby.
Good luck to you. I'm taking Singapore.
And you're on Singapore Airlines. And then we're jumping from Jakarta to Doha via Qatar Airlines.
Yes. And then Doha to San Francisco, then to Seattle.
Does Qatar give out pajamas on every long-haul flight?
I believe so.
I'm interested to see what they're like.
They're nice.
I've never flown them, so.
It is a very well-done product.
Okay. I'm interested to see what
it is. Of the three Mideast carriers, I think they are the best.
Okay. I'm interested. So, I've never flown EVA either, so.
Nor have I.
I want to see what that's like. But, all right. We are going to probably record the bonus episode.
From somewhere.
In a lounge. We'll see how this goes. So, to our regular listeners, thank you for supporting the show. To our Patreon subscribers, stick around. You'll hear some bonus topics. We don't know what they're going to be yet. I haven't thought about it. Haven't gotten that far.
TBD.
And, yeah, but thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.